This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The war machine has stopped mostly in Khartoum. The two sides are observing ceasefire. They stopped fighting each other. But violation against civilians never stopped.
That's Khartoum resident Tariq Abdallah, who says he has not heard gunshots or heavy shelling for hours in the latest ceasefire in the Sudan capital. Details coming up also. Ugandan police say they arrested 20 people in the massacre of 42 people in a school. And today is the Juneteenth holiday in the United States, commemorating the end of slavery. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Some residents of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, say they have not heard any gunshots since a 72-hour ceasefire began Sunday morning. Residents say even though the ceasefire appears to be holding, they still worry about a shortage of basic commodities in local markets. Michael Atit reports from Juba.
A cautious calm came over Khartoum Monday, a day after a 72-hour ceasefire agreement came into effect. The quiet gave hope to many civilians in the city after the recent wave of violence. Some residents of the capital Khartoum and Al Obeid area of North Kordofan State say the truce seems to be holding. Speaking to VOA Monday from the Omdurman neighborhood in Khartoum, Tariq Abdallah says he has not heard any gunshots or heavy shelling for hours. Abdallah says even though the two warring parties seems to be observing the ceasefire this time around, harassment and intimidation of civilians along the checkpoints and within residential areas continue to take place.
The war machine has stopped mostly in Khartoum. The two sides are observing ceasefire. They stopped fighting each other, but violation against civilians never stopped.
Abdallah notes that as civilians remain cautiously optimistic about the ceasefire, it remains difficult for many families to access basic services. He says people are still finding challenges in getting water, electricity, and other basic grocery items for daily consumption.
Most of the things that people are in dire need of, especially like children's food and medicines for those who are suffering from chronic diseases, these things either are not available or you need to search for them in many places in order to get this stuff.
Amira Saleh, who resides in the Soba neighborhood south of Khartoum, says she could not hear any gunshots this morning in her area. Saleh also told VOA that her family is running out of food and is not able to access nearby markets due to many roadblocks set up by the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, which is locked to power struggle with the military. This is where some shops have some remaining food commodities. She says this is the main challenge that is facing us nowadays. But we don't have any much to do, only we surrender our lives to God. While in Al Obeid town of North Kordofan State, residents there reported that there has been some calm in and around area since Sunday morning. Speaking to VOA, Al Obeid resident Cliff Akile said the town is cautiously hopeful as both the military and the RSF are maintaining their positions. Akile describes the situation as normal. Akile says the situation today is normal. There are no gunshots or fighting in and around the town. This may be due to the ceasefire that began on Sunday. He says, in the past weeks, we used to hear a lot of fighting in and around Al Obeid here. We have been living in fear that any time our area can be attacked. Clashes between the army and the RSF, which began on April the 15th, displaced about 2.2 million individuals, including 1 million children. In a report released on Thursday, UNICEF says the ongoing fighting in Sudan has left more than 13 million children in dire need of humanitarian assistance. The report said more than 330 children were killed and 1,900 others injured during the first week of June. Michael Latit for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
Ugandan security forces have stepped up patrols along the frontier with the volatile Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Yesterday, the Ugandan border town of Mpandwi Luhabira began burying victims of a brutal attack on a school by suspected extremist rebels that left 42 people dead, all but four of them students. Ugandan police say they have arrested 20 suspected collaborators of the rebel-allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, who are believed to have carried out the attack Friday night. Ugandan journalist Charles Mwangwa Mpagi tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that the brutal nature of the killings matches the ADF style, but there's been no confirmation of the militia's role.
Well, I think the story of ADF in relation to this particular attack needs to be handled with a little bit more caution at this moment. I think that the government and security officials in Uganda are realizing that they concluded too quickly on who orchestrated this attack, given what we have seen since after the attack, particularly from the Minister for Education, who's also the First Lady of this country, that the attack could have been orchestrated not by the traditional intentions or activities of the ADF, but rather other possible motivations. So whether it is actually ADF or something else, is yet to be concluded.
Since you have covered the ADF for a long time, do you find it strange that ADF has not claimed responsibility as yet, since they normally yearn for publicity?
ADF as a rebel force since it emerged in Uganda in 1996 has not been prone to making grandiose claims about the attacks. What I can say is that I am not surprised that they haven't claimed it so far, given what I just told you regarding the emerging theories as to this particular attack. But typically, this is ADF style. If you recall 1998, the attack on Kichwamba, Uganda Technical College Kichwamba, in present-day Sokoto City, this was the typical style of attack. The scale of death was equally high. They did attack some schools in Kasese, and this is the style of attack and the man of killing. So that they haven't claimed it, I think because of why and the particular import for them for this attack, if they indeed the attacking force, or the other causes that people might have copied from ADF and decided to execute an attack for other reasons using the ADF style of attacks.
The president has said on several occasions, some of the commanders have claimed since they have been in DR Congo, Eastern DR Congo, to have decimated and killed many of the ADF forces. What would you make of the ability to still cross the border and do some havoc?
ADF has been a very tricky rebel group for a very long time. It's managed to morph itself into different forms. You will recall that ADF actually was born out of another rebel group called NALU, whose leader, Amon Bazia, was killed in Nairobi many years ago. It emerged with new leadership and has kept changing and has found fertile ground in the Democratic Republic of Congo to be able to abduct and also recruit from people who believe in what ADF stands for, Islamization, the Islamic ideology on one part, the majority of their members have been easy to convince to believe in what the ADF has claimed it's fighting for. So I am not surprised that they have had this staying ability, that repeated efforts to wipe them out and claims that they have been decimated have always come to surprise the nation and the world when they crowd another attack since 1996.
That's Charles Mwangwa Mpagi, a Ugandan journalist. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. Ahead of tomorrow's World Refugee Day, humanitarian agencies are distributing aid to the nearly 500,000 refugees who live in Cameroon. The UN Refugee Agency says another 400 Nigerians arrive every month in the country, which, in addition to the refugees, has 1 million internally displaced persons. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's capital that the UNHCR says it has received only 30% of the funds needed to help the refugees.
The UN's refugee agency, UNHCR, reports that the number of refugees in Cameroon has increased to 479,000, up slightly from 2022. Humanitarian agencies and aid groups have been distributing food and planting seeds to the refugees ahead of World Refugee Day on Tuesday. About 3/4 of the refugees in Cameroon are from the Central African Republic, a country rocked by violence since 2013, when a rebel group ousted then-President François Bozize, prompting reprisals. Most of the other refugees in Cameroon are Nigerians, displaced by Boko Haram militant attacks, with the majority living in Minawawo camp in northern Cameroon. The refugees in Minawawo elected Isaac Luka as their spokesperson. Luka fled Nigeria's Borno State in June 2014 after Boko Haram terrorists killed more than 20 people in his village. Luka says it has not been easy for the United Nations and donor agencies to provide for the increasing number of refugees in Minawawo.
At first, UNHCR gave subvention to take care of the health of the refugees. The European Union give some money also to complete the unavailable medication in the hospital. Education is free in the camp, but 200 children in a classroom is not easy. Each refugee will have a card that you go to any hospital in the country without paying.
Cameroon's government says Minawawo lies in an area where desertification is prevalent and water, food and natural resources are scarce. Camp resident Esther Bonga from Nigeria says refugees at times run into conflicts with their host community members over scarce natural resources.
I am managing to feed my children with the support of World Food Program and UNHCR. When we go to find firewood in the forest, the host community pursue us, and when we no go to find firewood, we are in problem.
UNHCR says Minawawa was built for 15,000 refugees, but is now home to about 70,000. Olivier Guillaume Bier is the UNHCR representative in Cameroon. He says a majority of CAR and Nigerian refugees who fled to Cameroon lost everything in their countries of origin and need help. But Bier says UNHCR received only about 30% of the $150 million it needed to take care of refugees' humanitarian needs in 2022.
We know that there are problems with refugees from Ukraine, that we need to meet the request for refugees from Afghanistan, from Sudan, but we would like to call on the donors to not forget Cameroon and to support Cameroon to support refugees. When refugees are willing to repatriate, we will facilitate your return. What we are praying for is to have full peace so that all refugees will be able to repatriate home.
Bier spoke on Cameroon state broadcaster CRTV on Monday. Cameroon says a majority of the refugees it hosts do not want to return to CAR or Nigeria. However, last year, more than 4,000 Nigerians agreed to voluntarily return. Within the past 18 months, about 1,000 CAR refugees have returned to their country in a voluntary repatriation exercise supervised by UNHCR. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Reuters News reports France will offer Tunisia 25.8 million euros, or $28 million, to help it stop boats carrying migrants across the Mediterranean. French Interior Minister Gérard Darmanin announced the aid during a visit to Tunis today. The money will pay for equipment and training and comes in addition to a $114 million package the EU announced earlier this month to help Tunisia tackle a big rise in migrant departures. Perilous sea crossings, often on crowded, flimsy boats, have led to a terrible toll of drownings, as well as a big increase in migrant arrivals in Italy this year, causing political conflict in Europe. Tunisian President Kais Saied has said his country will not be a border guard for Europe, but he also announced a crackdown in February on sub-Saharan African migrants living in the country. Malawi is emerging victorious in its battle against the deadliest cholera outbreak in the country's history, which has killed nearly 2,000 people since its onset in March of last year. Health authorities say the country has seen a steady decline in the death rate, with no new cases or hospitalizations for the past 2 weeks. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
A cholera situation update report, which Malawi's health ministry released Sunday, shows that the outbreak has been fully controlled in 21 districts. These include Chitipa, Loa, Kasungu, Likoma, Nzimba South, Nzimba North, Mwanza, Ngatabe, Nchisi, Palombe and Lilongwe, which reported most of the cases. Minister of Health Khumbize Kandodo Chiponda says in a statement that even though the outbreak has been controlled in most of the districts, a few areas are still reporting cases. These include Balaga, Blanta, Chikwawa, Machinga, Nsanje, Ncheu, Salim Zomba. George Mbotua is the spokesperson of the health office in Nsanje district. He says the district is recording an average of one or two cases per day. However, the number is still lower than the average of about 30 daily cases during the peak of the outbreak.
We have continued to record cases because maybe about 60% of Nsanje is bordered by Mozambique. And these cases are coming from across the borders. We still have some local transmission, but very minimal. And this is coming in because basically the adoption of hygiene behaviors has been very slow.
Mbotwa says the cross-border cases largely happen because most Mozambican nationals stay away from their country's health facilities and seek medical assistance at Malawian hospitals. He says, however, that efforts are being done to contain the cross-border cholera infections.
We have done the coordination meeting with Mozambican officials recently on a broader healthy perspective, giving more attention to cholera. That's the only activity that we have done, but we find it very important because we are able to share the preventive measures that we are implementing in different countries.
Malawi registered the first cholera case in March of last year. Statistics from the Public Health Institute of Malawi show that the country has so far recorded 58,870 cumulative confirmed cases and 1,761 deaths. Malawi, however, has now seen a steady decline in the death rate, with no new cases or hospitalizations in most districts for the past 2 weeks. Health authorities attributed the success story to various anti-cholera interventions, including nationwide vaccination campaign the government and the World Health Organization rolled out in May of last year. Also, this past February, President Lazarus Chakwera launched a national campaign against cholera, which saw authorities ban the sale of already cooked foods in open places. Experts, however, have warned Malawians against relaxing the prevention measures. George Jobe is the executive director for the Malawi Health Equity Network.
We should remember that we have had cholera cases throughout the dry season, which should be a lesson that we can have cholera cases any time, not only during the rainy season. Therefore, we encourage Malawians to continue observing their prevention measures.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by ingesting food or water contaminated with bacteria. The disease affects both children and adults, and if untreated, can kill within hours. The health ministry has advised people with signs and symptoms of cholera to promptly go to the nearest treatment unit. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Today is the Juneteenth federal holiday in the United States. The name comes from the day after the end of the U.S. Civil War in 1865, June 19th, when U.S. soldiers arrived in the island city of Galveston, Texas, and informed slaves they were free. Slaves had already been freed in other parts of the South, but most slaves in Texas were kept in bondage until the army arrived. As Greg Flakes reports, while the holiday is now celebrated nationwide, it has special significance to the people of Galveston.
The celebration of Juneteenth in Galveston, Texas, began several days before the actual holiday with picnics, parades, and concerts. Juneteenth is a celebration of Black culture and its contributions to the culture at large. But its significance is rooted in its history, according to event organizer Sam Collins. He says a 460-square-meter mural in downtown Galveston honors General Gordon Granger, his mostly Black troops, and the people who were freed.
There were only about 1,200, a little over 1,000 enslaved people on the island. But after Juneteenth, the message spread from the island, and those 1,200 people plus the other 250,000 enslaved people in the state of Texas kept the oral history of what happened here in Galveston alive.
Juneteenth has a deep emotional connection for many African Americans, but some white people support it as well, like Ronnie Hall from Baytown, Texas.
Well, I think it may have started out for just Black people, but I think it's gotten bigger than that. Mm-hmm.
So you celebrate it too yourself?
Yeah, sure.
There were more people of all races at the island's beaches on the weekend than at Juneteenth events, but some residents and visitors enjoyed a Juneteenth parade. U.S. Army veteran Tawan Parsons came here from Louisiana for Juneteenth.
Well, it's important to remember what has happened, but don't let ourselves be defined by the past. Utilize this time to not only celebrate the freedom that was achieved by the people here in Galveston, but to remind ourselves to look forward to our continued freedom.
Parsons worries about attempts by some politicians to hide aspects of history that they find disturbing, including slavery. Collins says knowledge of historic events like Juneteenth could reduce political polarization and help the country.
We're responsible for repairing the foundation of this country by telling the truth and telling the true history in those stories, because the only way we're going to heal is to tell the truth.
Collins says some people think educators promote guilt rather than patriotism with their emphasis on slavery, but he argues that a truthful depiction of history will make the country stronger. Greg Flakes for VOA News, Galveston, Texas.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. news, sports, science, and entertainment. Available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves, 909 kHz and 1530 kHz. Our short waves are 60-80.